It's the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show bonus hour, Rick, our maiden voyage.
Yes, and aren't you lucky? You get another hour of us.
Another hour of pure radio gold.
Well, it might be tonight because we actually have in our bonus hour Pamela Michelle from Sports Infusion.
A competent sports voice on these airwaves for a change.
Yes,
a rare feat on these airwaves.
So. She'll be in a little bit. But thanks for joining us, and drop us a line at asylumfootball@gmail.com.
Yeah, hit us up on Twitter, @asylumfootball. Help us spread the word of the bonus hour. Like we talked about, this could be anything. Today we're going to bring Pamela Michelle on. We're going to talk some football. We're going to keep up with the theme of what we do. But we are going to take this hour in a lot of weeks in whatever direction we want. Whatever Rick likes to talk about, his craw and how things are stuck in it all the time. We're going to go there, just regale you with personal stories, wacky, weird news, anything going on, anything goes in this show. It'll be a little more structured this week. We will get to some sports in about 20 minutes, but until then, Rick, we're just going to have a little fun.
Of course. And, we're doing this, and thanks to our growing audience, we're trying to take this basically to the next level.
Absolutely. We'd like to make a living out of this. My 9-to-5, Rick, I don't know about yours, but it
definitely
sucks. It sucks.
So, anyway, what we were doing, and of course, I mean, you've heard our podcast, so you know the sound quality that we have is actually pretty good.
For a podcast.
Yeah, for a podcast. But, we've been, talking to some people, so we're getting a
movers and shakers.
Studio quality,
yes.
I would say, demo prepared.
Yeah, believe it or not, there are some folks out there interested in what we do.
I just want to tell you a little story.
Oh, okay, a story.
I was contacting some studios around and
to cut our demo, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
So, exactly, yeah, to get this studio quality demo. Well, of course, I just really hadn't really dealt with a lot of these people. I certainly can't sing.
Yeah, we know
so
that.
So I just got on the net and I started looking and everything. It was surprisingly a lot come up and they're not even in business anymore.
Really? So the studios are gone.
So anyway, I get this one and I call the number. And I'm going to paraphrase, but this is basically how the conversation went.
Oh, okay. I'm looking forward to this.
The phone rings. Hello.
Oh, no, thank
I
you for
said,
calling
okay,
Bill's
Studio.
This is Bill.
Is this XYZ Recording Studio?
Call him out. What was their name?
Yeah.
You had to think about it for a minute.
So I told him what we were doing. I can probably help you.
Oh, he can probably help
you. Yeah,
well,
that's good.
Awful congenial of him.
Little bit of, a little bit of small talk. Well, then come to find out, I had a really good quality studio.
Okay. Had.
But
did you say had?
But due to my mom's health, I had to move back into her home and take care of her.
Okay. Well, that's a noble effort there.
Got rid of everything. I'm doing it out of a bedroom.
Wait, stop. Hold on.
I'm serious.
He's doing the studios in his bedroom.
Yeah.
In his mother's
house. Now, everything comes down to the mics, and I got some good mics.
Oh, he's got good mics.
I got some good mics.
In his mother's bedroom.
And everything comes down to the mic, and I can do some good stuff with these mics.
Okay.
Now, do you need two mics? I said, yeah. He goes, well, do you guys use windscreens? I said, well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I use windscreens on the mics that we have. Well, can you
no.
Can you bring one with you? I only have one.
So this man
I'm serious.
Was willing to accept money from us
yes.
to go to his mother's house, go into his childhood bedroom, and bring our own equipment.
That's not the best part.
Oh, we're not done yet.
No, this isn't the best part. And so I'm trying to get off. He goes, well, being polite, because, believe it or not, I am polite.
Ever the gentleman, Rick Gray.
I said, well, what are your hours and so forth?
Oh, okay. Hours. Yeah, that's a fair question.
Well, I prefer that you do it. I prefer you do it during the week, in the morning.
Oh.
I said, well, that's not really good, because, I work and so is my partner and so forth.
We got the 9-to-5.
Well, my mom ain't here then. So she won't be yelling at me to bring her stuff.
All right. So So let's paint a picture here, Rick. So unfortunately,
I painted comic book guy in my mind from The Simpsons, man.
But just to rewind to recap this episode. So this gentleman advertised on the internet apparently for these services
at one
right?
time or another. He
at one time had a great studio with great equipment. Now again, right. noble effort. I assume when you get old and feeble, you're gonna have to move in with me, and I'm gonna have to take care of you. And so I get it. He's a good guy. He'd take care of your mother. So he shuts down the studio, moves in with his mother, sets up the studio in his bedroom. Ask you to bring your own equipment,
right.
and ask to do it
yeah.
at a time. Now, where's the mother going during the day? That's the question I'm wondering.
She goes for treatments.
Oh, okay.
You know.
Okay.
Therapy. Oh, therapy, that's right. what it was.
So
therapy,
that's when you
got
to squeeze the show in while mom's doing physical therapy.
Right. So.
Otherwise, she's yelling up the stairs for a bowl of soup halfway through our episode. Try to picture this. We are two fledgling jerks in a basement, basically, trying to make a go at this. And thank you to all you listeners. We have taken this way further than we ever thought we would, to the point where we have some interest for, believe it or not,
yeah, exactly.
from some people in the know. And,
but fear not, I have found a quality professional studio. And
I was going to ask you, what time did you make the appointment with this guy? Do I need to take the day off of work?
Well,
we need to bring mom anything? That's the question. I'm not big on the social graces.
Well, I didn't know she liked tuna or bologna, so I just figured we had to bring her a sandwich.
Obviously, we need to bring one microphone. We know that. And then the one windscreen. Or he's got the two mics, so we need a windscreen and some sort of...
Well, we can bring our control board, too.
Yeah. But if we bring that and some sort of peace offering for mom, I say we go with it. This guy's got to be a bargain, right? I think he's cutting us a deal.
I'll tell you what, it's just...
And then we got to take our shoes off when we get to the door.
It was hysterical.
There's so much going on here.
It was hysterical, but I guess it's just part of...
The life and times of trying to make it in this business.
Part of life. I mean, you come across all kinds of characters. However, this weekend also, going to another story.
Oh, here, okay. This is what the bonus hour should be. I'm liking this. Rick.
I was fortunate enough to be invited to go on, to call in to Jason Fairman's Root 4 Sports. If you haven't heard him, check him out. Great podcast. They had a great idea. And... actually, of course, this is a stupid story, too. I was supposed to be home.
Ah, yes.
And here in western Pennsylvania, we got a lot of snow on Sunday.
We've got a lot of snow since freaking October.
Well, I'm coming home. I should have been home at probably about 11 or 5 after 11 in the morning. Get caught behind, I don't know how many vehicles, but it turns out some idiot... out in a blizzard, has to go somewhere, wherever they're going, in a station wagon.
I'm guessing McDonald's.
In a station wagon.
Well, yeah. They go good in the snow. They're rear-wheel drive. They're 25 years old.
To make a long story short, I got in late. I called in late, so I didn't get a whole lot of time to be on the show. But they had a great idea. What were they doing.
Are we about to steal that idea? Is that what you're telling me?
No, we can't steal it. Okay. We're hacked. We're not that horrible.
Can we borrow it?
But they were doing, we actually did it last year for fantasy.
So they stole it from us.
Maybe.
And are you accusing Mr. Fairman of stealing it?
Certainly not.
Is it Fairman, Fairman?
Certainly not. Anyway, they were seeding the top 64, like we did with seeding.
We did the fantasy draft. We're going to do that again this year.
Yes, we are.
And
we were right, too.
We got Jamal Charles. Really,
almost. I mean,
although he did beat Doug Martin in the finals, so we might have swung a miss on that one.
You just stick with
the champion was right. We nailed it.
Just stick with the champion. All right. Anyway, they were doing
no reason for
the
that.
Top 64 athletes of all time.
Ooh, athletes of all time.
So when I called in, of course, they were in mid-conversation.
Because you were late behind the station.
Exactly. Line. Weaving and fishtailing up these little...
Why didn't you call on your cell phone? Yeah, you can do that now.
I didn't have the number with me at the time, because I'm figuring, okay, I'm going to be home, no problem, I'm going to be at the comfort of my desk and all this kind of stuff. So I call in, and right off the bat, when he picks up the phone, he says, we did a little small talk. He goes, okay, Rick, is this what we're doing? Give me your four number one seeds.
Ooh, just like that.
All-time athletes.
Okay.
All right. So basically, I have to come up with four number one seeds of all the athletes of all time.
Wow.
And basically in a matter of a few seconds, here I am trying to run these athletes through my head, from Jim Thorpe, Michael Jordan, Muhammad Ali. I mean, you can name
Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah. One of my number one seeds right there.
First name that popped into my head, Rick.
He was my first number one seed, was Wilt Chamberlain. My second, of course, these are all number one seeds.
Yeah.
I came up with Jim Brown.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, All-America lacrosse, All-America football.
No argument.
Yeah.
No argument. I know it's a man crush for you, but I have no argument in this case.
Then, I mean, and I just could not do it. I put in Barry Sanders.
The argument can be made.
And then I was really in a pickle here. I'm thinking, you know, Muhammad Ali, and I'm thinking, like I said, Jim Thorpe. I was thinking Joe DiMaggio. I was thinking, anyway, make a long story short, I was thinking Michael Jordan.
He might be my fourth number one seed.
But my fourth number one kind of took them by surprise, but they didn't seem to argue. Roberto Clemente.
Yeah.
Probably the greatest arm I've ever seen in my life by far. Question. The greatest right fielder over anybody. And, of course, Willie Mays came to mind as well.
Yeah, similar skill set. Very
right.
Similar. Maybe
so
more power for
those
Willie.
Those were my four number one seeds.
Okay. Hard to argue with him. Barry Sanders, I think, is a little – it's a surprise to me, but I can't right now – good argument against
him. Yeah, he popped into my head, you know, as I was thinking. It was like, wow. I mean, this guy was phenomenal. You know, strong, fast, nimble, quick, you know. So, anyway, those were my four. And some of the other ones I heard, you know, of course, Michael Jordan was a favorite as a number one. Babe Ruth, surprisingly, got some nominations for a number one seed. And I'm going to have to follow up with Jason. I'm not sure how they're doing it, you know, where they're getting all the athletes to make the field.
Yeah, and then how they're going to
so
break
forth.
It down.
How it's going to break up. Muhammad Ali was one again. And there was a few other ones. And then we were talking basically after the show on Twitter, Jason and I, and I was saying, you know, from a mental aspect, wouldn't it be cool if you could put, like, Jack Nicklaus or Tiger Woods in there? And he said, yeah, he said he thought of that, but the athletes, ha-ha, you know. Yeah, you know.
There's got to be room for a golfer. I think there does.
Well, you know, but anyway, they're probably not going to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, so, I mean, but there's so many different facets of it that you could really go to. I thought that was just a very interesting idea.
It is cool. What you have to wonder about, I hear you mention Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth is one of the, if not the greatest baseball player to ever play. I had a hard time calling that dude an athlete. And so, if you understand where I'm going, when you bring up the golfer type of situation,
right?
Are you looking at top performers in their sport or true athletes? Now, if you're talking athletes, that's a different ball game all of a sudden. Now you're talking, look to the Olympics. Look at some of these guys, even Apollo Ono, these type of guys. That's where, do you mean athlete or do you mean sports personalities?
Yeah, Ingemar Stenmark, you know, some of this kind of stuff, you know, from way back.
Who now?
Oh, yeah.
Skidmark,
exactly.
What did you say?
But now, you know, you have to do, I guess, a lot of due diligence and put them in their era. Is Jim Thorpe, could he compete with Michael Jordan on a level playing field? Certainly not.
Not at basketball.
But in the day, I mean, he was, what, maybe 6 foot, 190 pounds tops,
which
I'm going to say.
Which was a big dude back then.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, but he was head and shoulders athletically. I mean, he played professional baseball, football, which kept him out of the Hall of Fame for baseball, or the Olympics. That's what it was. He played baseball, football, won the gold medals in the Olympics. And I can't argue with Jim Thorpe as being a number one by any stretch.
How do you? But at the same time, probably by comparison to today's athletes, he wouldn't even measure. He wouldn't
certainly not.
Couldn't even compete. But
it was
era,
the athletes
was
of the day. And it comes back to mind of when Harmon Killebrew was still alive. You know, I mean, he was a slugger, you know, over 500 home runs for the Minnesota Twins. And he was talking, and it was talking about the steroids and comparing to the bigger athletes and this, that, and the other. He goes, no, we're not as big and we're not as muscular. He says, but guess what? He says, when baseball season was over, to feed my family, I went to the docks on Lake Michigan and started right. working.
Yeah, whole different ballgame.
Yeah. Yeah, he says, I didn't have, you know, a gym in my house, and I didn't have personal meal trainers and, you know, a trainer for this and that and whatever. And I think you know the story. But, I mean, and that goes back to the Jim Thorpe Dave's, the Babe.
Right. He just did it.
Sure.
He just did. And
exactly.
at that time, a lot of these games were.
But check that out, Root 4 Sports. And Jason Fairman had that going on. That was a neat idea, I thought. The top 64 seeds of the athletes. And I don't know if they're going to take votes or whatever, which could lead to some upsets because, you know, okay, say maybe Jim Thorpe doesn't make a number one. I may have to take him over some people,
yeah.
you know, if you start putting everything into perspective. Or a Muhammad Ali
yeah.
may beat a whoever, Jabbar. Or, I mean, just think of
yeah,
somebody. I don't know.
You get
so,
some interesting matchups
right.
there. And it's neat to think about. And I'd like to get their thoughts on how you're going to make those decisions, you know. Let's just say, Rick, we've got about 2 minutes before we'll give Pamela a call here. Let's just say you end up with a Final Four matchup, Wilt Chamberlain versus Muhammad Ali. I'll just throw it out there. Two very different
yeah.
sports. What criteria are you going to use to decide a winner?
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, I think obviously longevity's one. Well, they're both with longevity, no doubt about it. Dominating a sport. I mean, they both did that. Wilt Chamberlain, I thought, was, yeah, he was a scoring machine. But you know what? When he got a little older and he started, he got big.
Yeah.
You know, when he got older. And he became a defensive monster. He was kind of like Russell was the only guy that can control Wilt Chamberlain. It almost became Wilt Chamberlain could only be the guy that could control Kareem Abdul-Jabbar
yeah.
at the time. So... yeah, he adapted and played well. Muhammad Ali, the greatest boxer of all time. I don't care who you compare to. He beat Joe Frazier 2 out of 3. He beat George Foreman. And I'd argue those are number 2 and number 3 right there.
Probably. And that's what's interesting there. You put a Muhammad Ali
heavyweights anyway.
Or one of those guys in today's era, they would be so dominant that you would automatically
yeah.
view them as one of those number one seeds. He was probably the best of his era, but it wasn't by much. He
right.
had competition there. You look at today's heavyweight division, he would have run roughshod through all of it. So it's interesting to look at it that way, too.
Yeah.
What boxing was then, the competition he had,
right.
and he stuck out. Maybe he wasn't as dominant because he lost fights. Although he took 2 or 3, he lost once to Frazier. He lost fights. He wouldn't lose a fight now. That man would retire
no.
undefeated
no.
unless he did in Evander Holyfield and fought into his 50s and started getting his butt handed to him
exactly.
Once a year just to get that extra payday. Back then, he had competition. He was barely the best of his era, whereas you
right.
put him in another era, it wouldn't even have been close.
No, agreed. And that was another thing I saw, you know, talking about on Joe Frazier. There were only two kinds of fighters that could beat Joe Frazier. Someone who could take punishment and was an excellent boxer, and someone that could hit harder than him. Well, guess what? He was in the same era with Muhammad Ali
right.
and George Foreman.
Yeah.
But anywhere else, I mean, he'd have destroyed Mike Tyson.
Yeah, take any one of those three, pull them out, and today especially, well, you got them Klitschko brothers, and
yeah.
then name another heavyweight. You can't even name another.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame. And you
I
know,
agree.
I did see where they're going to start looking at the effects of head injuries in boxing. I think boxing is about to go the way of the gladiators, Rick. I think
well,
as they really start to break that down.
How
I think
they,
boxing.
How can they justify that in the MMA is going
yeah, well,
crazy?
I think that's
going
to be another one, too. I think, you know, we've talked about it before, and I'm going to give Pamela a call here while you answer this question, as we're just sort of ragtag. I'm just going to call her up on Skype right here on the air, so hopefully she answers, but... you know, you look at, we worry about football and what football is going to look like, and is football going to be around, Rick, when your kid is your age? And it's a legitimate question with these head injuries, but let's look at your sports like MMA and like boxing. I honestly think they go the way of the dodo bird in our, at least in my lifetime. As old as you are, your lifetime could be tomorrow.
But, you know, do they, what are they going to do in boxing? Are they going to put helmets back on them like they do in the Olympics? You know, it seems kind of funny, but I think maybe they may, it may get to that if they're going to survive.
And if we, as we learn more, you almost can't. Oh, I just smashed my head off the microphone.
Now you'll get a concussion. Right. They're going to stop that now.
We're going to stop podcasting. Yeah. So let's stop here before I get hurt. I'm going to hit send, Rick. I'll let you take care of the intro.
All right. This is, hopefully she answers, is Pamela Michelle at Sporty Diva from Sports Infusion. I hope we you dialed the right number.
Hello?
Is this Pamela?
This is.
You are the winner of the Asylum Wheel of Fortune. Oh, no. Now, this is Pamela Michelle, the at Sporty Diva. You'll know her on Twitter, and she's Sports Infusion. Man, it's long time. You know, first time we actually got to talk to you.
Yeah, it is. I'm excited.
So, tell everybody a little bit about Sports Infusion, and so just in case for some reason they've heard of us and not you.
Well, Sports Infusion is a show that I do every Monday night at 9 p.m. with my co-host Andrew Fishbane, and we're basically an all-inclusive sports show. We primarily cover football, obviously, during football season, and we do have Russell Baxter, who is our resident football guru. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with Russell. He does fantastic work. He's basically the football guru and a part of our show as well. Yeah, we cover just basically everything under the sun. We do a lot of partnerships with different charities. Right now we're partnering with What a Fan, which is a sports conference that is annually held in Orlando, Florida, and we're, you know, doing a Fans Against Child Abuse campaign for them. And I'm also recently doing a series with a man named John King, and he is basically documenting his journey. He is a man who has a disease that wasn't supposed to live past 37 years old, and he's 50, and he's basically a gym rat, but now he wants to do bodybuilding competitions. So we're actually documenting his series called One Shot, and it's just basically to inspire people to take the chance that they really want to take in life, to not settle for what they're doing if they have a bigger dream.
Well, that's awesome. That is just some really good stuff there, and best of luck with all your charities. And
thank you.
Yeah, certainly we're familiar with Russ. He's been on our show. You know, he's a good friend of ours on, you know, on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. He's very knowledgeable. Just the stuff that comes
fantastic
out of that guy is amazing. Yeah. But we all know that, you know, I wanted to hit on with you because since you're in the business, you bleed the old giant blue. What happened this year? I mean, that was just a total implosion. Certainly, it was a surprise to me and just about everybody else how bad they really were. And was it just a combination of things? Obviously, they had a lot of injuries at running back.
Right.
But, you know, Eli was miserable.
It was just a strange season for Eli Manning. I'm not pretending like Eli is Peyton. I'm not pretending that whatsoever. But Eli is a solid quarterback. He is. Is he elite? Every now and then he borderlines on that for me. To be honest with you, I was not really that big of a fan of Eli Manning coming to the Giants. I personally would have rather have had Phillip Rivers at that point. I was not a big fan of the trade. I did not really like what went down, and it took a little bit for Eli to grow on me. I think what happened with the season is this, is that, everybody thinks that I'm a Giants apologist, and I try to make excuses, and I think that when you're a fan of your team and you're very passionate about them, you automatically become an apologist anyway, and you're going to give reasons why your team was just basically subpar. And for me, the O-line is just horrendous. I mean, Justin Pugh did a really good job, you know, in his rookie year, but they need a little bit more help on that O-line. Eli can get around a few of those things. I think what the problem, too, was when the running game just isn't there. The Giants have always had a fairly balanced type offense where, you know, they had the big boy and they had the speed. You know, they had a decent running game for quite some time. And that was just not there this year. I mean, I am not sold whatsoever on David Wilson. I am not sold on him. I think he's a terrible blocker. He has great speed. But if you can't hit your blocking assignments when the play isn't yours and you're allowing people to get at your quarterback, then there's a problem with that. I think that Andre Brown being out, obviously, you know, really hurt them a lot with his broken leg. I think had that not happened, maybe, I'm not saying definitely, but maybe it would have been a little bit different because there would have been a little bit more of a running game, and they weren't going to have to go scraping the bottom of the barrel by basically pulling Peyton Tillis eating ice cream off of his couch.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you brought up a good point with Wilson being bad pass blocking. We covered that on shows, you know, back before the season started. You know, I made the point I never could see Ronnie Hillman doing anything with Denver if he's not going to protect Peyton, and that was always
right.
His big downfall. Well, Wilson's the same way, and you cannot afford to let your franchise quarterback get beat up like that.
No, you really can't. And well, to me, like I said, that's what David Wilson is to me. The game that he had where he has, like, all those yards, you also have to realize that it was against, at that point, the Saints, who were giving up, like, 5,000 yards that year. I mean, it was just insane, the numbers that David Wilson was able to put up against a very bad, poor defense. And I think that that's what people wanted to kind of see from him and think that that was what his production was going to be. And I knew that that wasn't the truth. And personally, I mean, I think that the Giants need to possibly draft a running back this year. I think that that's one of their needs. I don't think that's their main need. But I think with the unbalance of the offense, Eli took a lot of it on himself because he wasn't really comfortable with how much time his O-line was giving him. And he knew that the running game just wasn't there, so he was taking a lot of it where he had to pass. And the sad part is, he was passing a lot to the other teams. I mean, sometimes there was not anyone even in the area where you're like, really, seriously, where are you throwing with that? And I think that it was fear because he wasn't trusting, you know, his front to back him up. And then you look at the defense. The one thing that the Giants' defense had always been good at is basically not really allowing teams a whole lot of running yardage. Their secondary has been pretty soft for the last couple of years, but the running game was always usually something that they could control. And that didn't happen this year either. I mean, people were it was just horrible. People were running on them like crazy. And Justin Tuck obviously has lost a little bit because of his age. JPP, I really believe, came back too soon from his back surgery. I believe that, and I don't think he was ready to play. And at that point, they already had lost a couple of games where they were well on their way to being 0-4. I would have probably said, maybe I need a little bit more time for me, you know, to get healthy, because I'm really not doing the team a whole lot of good if I can't be JPP. You know, I mean, it was tough. The additions that they ended up getting with Beasley was a lot better, and it helped, but it just, I kept waiting for the magic to happen, is what I kept waiting for. And I think the New York Giants have always, even when you didn't think they could, they provided some type of spark.
Yeah, I think that was what a lot of people were doing last year, just kept waiting.
Yeah.
Okay, the Giants are going to win this week. No way they're going to lose this week. And they just were worse and worse and worse.
And I think what it comes down to, and I know Eli didn't have a lot of time to swing back to the offense, I'd be concerned as a Giants fan when I see Eli with 27 interceptions. At this point in his career, you really start to worry about his decision-making. I know he was under duress. I know Hakeem Nicks underperformed. The offensive line underperformed.
Yep.
But 27 interceptions, that's decision-making
issue. You know, the thing that worried me more than anything else was at the end of the season when they put Curtis Painter in. That's what worried me. It wasn't that Eli wasn't playing. This is why it worried me. It's because it made me really question how strongly they believe in Nesbitt That's really what made me wonder, because I understand why Painter's there. Eli gets hurt. He's supposed to go in. But at the same time, you drafted this kid. You know, he's been, obviously, through your whole camp, he's been learning the playbooks through the whole year and everything. Why not put the kid in and see what he can do? Like, it really made me wonder why they weren't putting the rookie in. I mean, he was a decent quarterback, obviously, at Syracuse. They really wanted him in there to try to maybe be groomed a little bit for when Eli isn't going to be there anymore. They need somebody else because no one can play forever. And it really bothered me that they ended up putting Painter in instead of the kid.
Yeah, I
agree.
That's
what actually bothered me.
I agree, and I'm almost leaning. They almost have to go first round to me, offensive line, because like you say, nobody plays forever. But I mean, let's not hasten it along here, because I mean this keeps up. Eli's not going to survive a whole lot longer.
No, exactly. I mean, he's probably this season, I would say, took a couple of years off of his career. I think that it probably did. It at least took a year off of his career. I mean, with the way that he was getting rushed and, you know, there was no confidence there. And Eli is not fiery necessarily like Peyton. You don't see him barking really at his guys on the sidelines. And sometimes he almost has that void look to me. You know what I mean? Where you look at Peyton Manning, you see the frustration. You see the fire in his eyes. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, you see the fire. You see it there. You see the competitor. Where Eli, it's just like, it's almost like he's just sort of like, he's very even keel.
Yeah, I mean, early in his career, you know, people were actually questioning some of his intelligence by some of the looks on his face. You know, and
right.
I'm certainly
not doing
that.
And there are times he looks like he's not exactly certain how he got there.
Yeah.
He's there.
He has that confused look on his face. I agree. I completely agree. That confused look is on his face. And it's just like, there's times where I'm screaming at the TV. I'm like, you know, show something. Like, show some excitement. Show some disappointment. Like, show me something.
Yeah.
Throw a helmet.
Show me Tom Brady coming off and screaming your head off and yelling at people and getting in somebody's face. Because, I mean, you know, you're watching Hakeem Nicks telling everybody I'm still an elite receiver. You didn't even catch a touchdown. And, you know, I mean, there's...
Well, Hakeem Nicks, I would be really surprised if Hakeem Nicks is actually a New York Giant in this coming 2014 season. I would be surprised if Hakeem Nicks was still a New York Giant.
Yeah, with the money
really
they had to give Victor Cruz,
there.
I think it makes Hakeem Nicks expendable, certainly. But,
yeah.
And look, and the thing with Eli, he doesn't show a lot of passion, but when he's sitting around the dinner table, he's got that extra Super Bowl ring to wave around a little bit, so I don't think he's got to apologize for that.
Yeah, he really does. And, you know, that's the thing. It's like, when people tease me, I'm just like, you know, well, Eli has two Super Bowl rings. Oh, well, and especially a lot of my Patriot buddies. And they're just like, well, Eli has two Super Bowl rings based on a lucky catch and some glue.
He gets them nonetheless.
That's
He's
right.
still wearing it.
And it's like, you know what, though? A win is a win. And, you know, let's just say that in New England, you guys had the Tuck rule. That's all I'm saying.
But that's a good point, but... Then again, you don't want Trent Dilfer waving his around in front of Dan Marino either.
Well,
I guess.
You're right, exactly. I mean, it's really strange how greatness can be defined. And I'm not trying to diminish anybody as far as greatness. But if you talk about titles and everything, would you really say that Robert Horry is the greatest NBA player because of all the rings and championships that he has, if you're defining greatness by championships?
No.
I don't think so.
But I think he's a piece of that puzzle, and I think Eli Manning is that. When you give him the defenses that they had, when you give him the running games he had, and being a playmaker as he is, I think it shows on his own, unlike his brother, he's not elite to the level where he's going to put a team on his shoulder and carry him. But he can be that above-average guy in the right situation with the right teams around him, and he's won Super Bowls doing that. He doesn't need to apologize for that to me.
He definitely doesn't. And Eli has the ability to make wide receivers look good as well, too.
Well,
I mean, he utilizes what he has.
Right. You know, and I want to expand a little bit. We covered it last week, or the week before, I can't remember. But it's, you know, Super Bowl ring to me... especially with some teams, maybe more than others, is a prime example of a team sport where you have a guy like Doug Baldwin actually trying to call out Chris Carter because Chris Carter wasn't totally enamored with the Seattle wide receiver core. Well, let me tell
right.
you, know, like we said, you know, Mr. Baldwin, you know, the Seattle Seahawks won the Super Bowl, not you.
Right, exactly. The Seattle Seahawks won the Super Bowl, and football is really one of the – it really does epitomize team sport. I mean, because when you look at baseball, you really can say that even though baseball is obviously a team sport as well, the pitcher has a lot to do with how the outcome of that game is going to be by where his location of the pitches are. You know, is he executing the game plan properly? Is he on the same page with the catcher? Okay, so mistakes get hit. Your defense is going to back you up. I understand that that's why they're there. But the pitcher is the main piece. He's the guy that's controlling a lot of your game, along with the game plan that the catcher has, you know, prepared with him. But football can't be done on one person. It just can't. If that was the case, then, you know, Tom Brady would be winning all the time. All
well,
the Super
if
Bowls
it was,
that he's been in.
If it was one person, Barry Sanders would have five Super Bowls. If it was
exactly.
if it was one person. So yeah, point well taken there. We could harp on the Giants all along, but I'm going to ask one last question on that. You know, Tom Coughlin against the wall this year?
I think it depends on what his contract is going to be. I think if the Giants are going to go more where they just want to do a year-to-year on him, I think that they're going to actually let him retire. I don't see them pushing him out. I think that he's deserved and won enough in New York where he basically gets a pass. He gets a pass for this year. And to their credit, any team that starts off the way they did and then fights in the end to actually get the games that they got, that says a little bit about the coaching. And that says what Coughlin means to these guys. And it wasn't like that when he first started. He really has only had two losing seasons since he's been in the Giants organization, and where they were really terrible seasons. And I really think that even though the season was obviously a season most Giant fans want to forget, with the two Super Bowl rings and the consistent of what the product he has been able to get to perform for him, I really think that Coughlin will have a pass, but depending on what management wants to give him.
Right.
If it's a 2-3 year, I could see him staying. But if they say, look, we only want to do a year thing, I really don't see him wanting to do something like that. And the thing is, I think if that was going to happen, it would have already happened by now. And I really can't see all of a sudden the Giants saying, okay, well, Tom Coughlin's not our coach anymore. Unless, like I said, he comes out and announces retirement. If he announces
right.
retirement, then you know it was sort of the Giants organization saying, look, we're going to do a contract on a year-to-year basis. Coughlin wants a couple of years. Whether or not he wants to think he can do them, that's also going to be something he has to decide. But I really don't see Coughlin going anywhere. They're obviously going to retool a few things, but it's not going to be Tom Coughlin.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to look at what you have. I mean, let's not forget, you talk about you only had a couple of bad years. He didn't have many bad years in Jacksonville either. And look at that franchise.
Well, let's not forget, he's fun to watch on the sideline. This
oh,
guy
yeah.
is nuts.
He really
I like
that.
He is nuts.
It makes
at least, like, Eli's not getting in anyone's face or anything, and he's not getting animated, but the coach is getting animated enough for him.
I could just
right.
to watch his face turn red and just start hopping up and down. I could just – there should be a camera on him at all times. He's just a lot of fun. So, hey, let's go 180 degrees. We covered it in the first hour of the show, and it'd be interesting to get in an outsider's point of view. I think as a hack radio show, we're obligated to talk about the Michael Sam situation and what your thoughts are on all of that.
Well, my thoughts on that, see, I'm trying to be as tactful as possible with this.
Tactful is not our strong suit. Just go ahead and throw it out there.
I find the timing of this very curious. And the way that this is, I understand that apparently there were a couple people that were going to quote unquote blow the whistle on him, so he felt the need to make this announcement, you know, basically via ESPN and have all the attention on him and to get his story out there the way he wants it, so he looks like he's in control of it. My point is that this should not be a story. It shouldn't. The sensationalism that has been already given to this is ridiculous. I don't care who he goes home to. I don't care what his sexual orientation is. The only thing I care about is if he is capable of playing in the NFL and if he is capable of helping my team win.
Well, Pam, please take 20 minutes and listen to our first segment of the show tonight, because we are in 100% agreement. I put it out on Twitter, and yeah, you might have saw it. I mean, I got one question. You know, yeah, he came out and said he's gay. I have one question. Can you stop the run and destroy a quarterback? Because that's basically all that matters.
That is all that matters. And unfortunately now, he's going to be the poster child for this. And that's not a wrong thing, but the thing is, it's going to put so much attention on him now, and it's going to bring that attention to whatever training camp, whatever team drafts mm-hmm. him that he goes to. I'm almost praying that he goes to an organization like the New York Giants or the New England Patriots that know how to deal with things like this. He needs to go to a team that has that strong kind of leadership where that there's a presence like Justin Tuck in the locker room. You know, I mean, when the whole Riley Cooper situation happened, Michael Vick stood up and said, look it, this is the way it is. I support what he said. I forgive him. You know, this is water under the bridge. There was strong leadership in that Philadelphia Eagles locker room. Whatever happened behind closed doors is exactly where it stayed. We don't exactly know what else was said there, but it was able to be taken care of and controlled. And if this is not something that is going to be controlled, there's going to be a lot of unnecessary attention given to this.
Sure.
And there's going to be a lot of unnecessary attention on their teammates too, where this could end up being a distraction, where guys are being asked, so how do you feel playing with a gay teammate? You know, it shouldn't matter.
Exactly. I mean, why does it matter? We talked about this earlier, like I said, in a previous, and Rick made a good point a couple years ago. What was the big circus, the media circus then? Tebow mania. You know, how is this Christian young man, he's going to be a distraction. Can he put up with the locker room attitude, blah, 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 and things people say? It's totally irrelevant and ridiculous.
It is irrelevant, and it is ridiculous. And the thing is like, the reason why I find the timing curious about this is, was there really somebody that was going to blow the whistle, basically, on him? Was there really a whistle to be blown? Because his teammates have known since August.
Right.
You know, why now? I mean, if his teammates have known since August, if somebody was really pissed off about a gay man being in the locker room with them or having a gay teammate, why wait till now?
Well, yeah, because like, we had Missouri making a run, basically,
exactly.
towards the end for a national title right until the very end, and they played a major bowl. They made a great run in the SEC, and no one heard anything about that. I made the point earlier in the previous hour that I think it's some sort of – somebody's gotten a hold of him, a marketing guy, an agent or something,
yeah.
and as soon as he starts falling in the draft, they're going to call foul.
And that's exactly what I had said on my show on Monday, is that, you know, my co-host feels that it's a very jaded type of point of view. But you obviously, at this level, when you're going to be drafted, I mean, I see him about a fourth, fifth round draft pick. That's about where I see his ability. I think he's capable of playing in the NFL. I mean, he's All-American. He's, you know, especially now that, you know, the whole there are a few teams that are switching to that 3-4 defense. You know, I mean, he is NFL viable, but it's just curious to me that the combine's coming up. You know, I mean, what if he doesn't really perform that well at the combine? You know, is this going to be something that they're going to use and utilize? If he falls past the fifth round where he gets taken eighth, ninth, you know, then people are saying, oh, well, it's because he's a gay man. It has nothing to do with it. It should have nothing to do with it. The story should not be a story. This attention should not have this attention. The only thing we should be focused on is his abilities, because that's the only thing that matters at the end of the day. You know, he keeps saying that he wants to be able to be to go to charity events with his life partner. Okay, that's fine. You know, he wants to bring his boyfriend to team functions and, like, just like a normal person, like all the athletes bring their girlfriends or wives. Okay, that's fine. But you know what? When things like this happen, the thing is, questions get asked all the time, and eventually this would have come out. Unfortunately, we're in a very social media type of society now where everybody, you know, thinks that they're a reporter. With the, you know, whole growth of Twitter, everybody wants to be the first one to get that scoop and to get people to favorite and retweet, you know, something that they said. And unfortunately, there's always a price to be paid for this. Personally, I think Jonathan Martin is going to have a hell of a harder time, you know, being in an NFL locker room than Michael Sam, personally, because Jonathan Martin broke the code. You know, what happened in the Miami Dolphins locker room, you know, was still, to this day, a whole bunch of shades of gray where we're really not sure exactly who's right, who's wrong, but it's very interesting to me that veteran players were siding with Incognito, and really no one stood up to take Martin's side of anything. I mean, I see Martin having a whole hell of a harder time in an NFL locker room than a gay man at this point.
Yeah, and the point, and then to swing it on the other side, I read a headline yesterday I brought up on the earlier show that says, you know, speaking of Mr. Sam, the bravest of all, Michael Sam moves us forward. I brought up this point. This ain't Jackie Robinson. This ain't the first cat to play in the league who's gay. He's just the first one that the media got a hold of. I don't see him breaking any barriers. Look, I applaud him for coming out, but it just doesn't matter. And it's getting blown so far out of proportion. I think you're setting the kid up to fail. And I almost think, to your point, and maybe it is a jaded point of view, you set him up to fail, but then he fails, you can be the aggrieved party by failing. I think that's part of it, too. If he falls to the seventh round of the draft, it's not because the combine didn't go well. It's not because the intangibles weren't there. It's because he's gay, and you make more money off of that than you're going to make on your rookie contract to begin with.
Right, and it's true. I mean, he's not the first player to be gay in the NFL, and I think that that's what everybody is losing sight of, and for some reason he's being deemed like the chosen one, the first gay player to come out. I mean, I try to be politically correct about this just because it's a very touchy situation, but I don't see him as brave.
I find it, you can tell that we're stammering around.
Just
because
spit
you,
it out.
Because,
come
you
on.
Know, okay, I'm going to ask you. You know, I was telling Rick early in the first hour.
The horrific,
you know,
things you say to me.
I work with a lot of females. Okay, now, okay, just for fun. Homosexuals are called gay, we're going to call heterosexuals happy.
Right.
Okay, so I'm coming up to you. This is the first time, you know, we've met. And this is basically, he's never met a lot of NFL GMs. But, okay, I'm going to Sports Infusion, and I want to be part of it. So, Pam, I'm Rick Briggs, and we've been doing a pretty successful podcast for about 4 years now. I've got a lot of fantasy football experience, a lot of sports in my background. And, oh, by the way, I'm happy.
Exactly.
I mean, what does that have to do with anything?
It has nothing to do with anything. I don't announce who I'm sleeping with behind closed doors. I mean, it doesn't matter. If you can do your job, you can do your job. That's it.
Exactly.
I don't think there's any more to say.
No,
I think that
it's true.
Out. So, hey, before we get you out of here, let's get it off football for a little bit. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the Marcus Smart situation? Where I've been obsessed with this since the night it happened. I can't get enough of it.
He's NBA ready. He already has a court confrontation going on.
This is Ron Artest part two.
Right.
But what I'm thinking, I almost can't blame the kid a little bit. I'm a Pitt season ticket holder. We're out here around Pittsburgh. I have noticed, and I don't even have as good of seats as that clown did, the fan. But you have unbelievable access to these college kids, especially in college basketball, that you don't have in professional sports or in football when you're so far away. I have met these guys just as a season ticket holder personally three or four times over now. The access you have to these players. Look, we had the on-court audio where he called him a piece of crap, but he at the time claimed there was a racial slur used. I don't know what was said, but for the kid to react like that, something was said, and I have such issue with these grown men. It's such a different dynamic when I go to a college game, being, you know, getting about 20 years removed from college age now. It's one thing to give. I've never been a fan to make a big spectacle at the games anyhow, but to give a professional athlete a hard time. But when you start doing this to college kids, and I emphasize the word kids. Look, Marcus Smart's going to be a professional football player or basketball player very soon. He acted out of line, but I can't blame the kid. I don't know what was said, but these fans, what you see at these games from the students is one thing. From a grown man, really appalls me.
Right. I mean, and when I first heard about it, and then I saw exactly the age of the gentleman that this happened with, I'm just like, are you kidding me? Really? You should know better. I mean, just because you get that closeness and you have that close of an access to a college athlete does not give you the right to disrespect him. And it doesn't give you the right to heckle, even though that is fan's nature. I mean, you know, fans are just deplorable nowadays. I mean, they cheer when people get hurt. I mean, you never want to cheer any type of injury, even if it's against a team that you hate and despise. You should never want, if you respect a sport being played by professionals, you should never really want anybody to be hurt or cheer the fact that they're hurt. It's just disgusting to me. And the fact that, you know, he goes into the stands and this altercation happens, you know, they say that this is who this kid is because this isn't the first time this has happened. I mean, he's gotten a little bit of rage in him before. He's, you know, kicked a chair and, you know, had a little bit of a temper tantrum as well.
Bob Knight used to do that on a nightly basis.
Yeah, but isn't that what we like in our wide receivers in the NFL?
Yeah.
Isn't that why we like our diva wide receivers? Is because of the, you know, little tantrums that they take. It's almost a passion that you want to see in a weird way when somebody gets worked up about it. Because when they're losing like that and they throw something, they get worked up, it's almost as if you associate that with, instead of maturity, with them caring a lot. And that's kind of how I view it.
Well, it goes back sensationalism. I mean, at the Super Bowl, Richard Sherman talks too much. Marshawn Lynch doesn't talk enough. And, you know, whatever. We covered something a couple of weeks ago. Rob Ryan's not a head coach because he won't cut his hair. I mean, they come up with anything. And, you know, I get a little bit off the subject, but, you know, it's like people can say anything. And I think the fans, you know, that they're so bombarded with it, I think the fans think that they can just do whatever they want.
Do whatever they want, exactly. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And when you have, just because you can be that close to an athlete, it doesn't give you the right to insult him. It doesn't give you the right to, you know, get in his face about it. You think about it, and when you're angry, it's very hard for most people, I'm not saying all, but most, to actually pause a little bit, take that step back and be like, and check their surroundings. A lot of us act on instinct. And when somebody gets in your face, somebody is pissing you off, somebody just called you something that is disgusting and should never be called to anybody, whatever racial slur it was he used. I'm not exactly sure which one it was. But when it sets you off like that, it's instilled in us to defend. It's instilled in us to fight back. And there are very few people, like I said, that can actually snap themselves into perspective and be like, wow, this is a bad deal. I got to step back. Kudos to those who can, but I know that when I'm irritated and I'm worked up about something, it takes a second or two for me to actually gather my surroundings too.
And this is a 19-year-old kid on top of it.
Exactly.
When you talk about bringing it into perspective. And this fan, you know, this kid's going to pay the price. And you got to suspend. I understand it. I don't necessarily like it, but I understand it. Meanwhile, this fan, this is the second time. I don't know if you saw, they had a video of him last year flipping off. I can't remember what team they are playing now after he hits a shot. This is what this guy does. He incites these 18, 19-year-old kids, then turns around and plays the victim. And I love in the video, too, the guy, I assume what was
yeah.
his wife, so appalled by the
yeah,
behavior
like,
of this after her fat, blowhard husband said whatever he said to incite it, and she's completely appalled by this. It's just, I think it speaks to sports in general, why this guy still has his tickets, and Marcus Smart's going to sit out three games leading up to the NCAA tournament while he's trying to get ready for an NBA career. It's a real disparity there, and I got a big problem with it.
Yeah, I have a big problem with it, too. And, you know, I guess he said that he was voluntarily not going to any more games, and he was giving up his tickets for the season.
Well, if the university had any guts, he'd be banned.
They should be revoked.
Yeah,
they should not be allowed.
Shouldn't be his choice.
Exactly. It shouldn't be his choice. It's not Marcus's choice. He has to serve what his suspension was handed down to him. And just because this fan, I was like, yep, you know what? I went a little bit crazy. I got a little bit too excited about everything. I'm not going to go to any home or away games for this season. I'm just going to give that up. Why do you get the right to give that up? You think about when you misbehave and you're a season ticket holder at a Major League Baseball game or at an NFL game. What happens to you? Your tickets get revoked, and you don't get the privilege to go to those games anymore. That's out of your hands. When you're a season ticket holder and you misbehave badly at other, major league sporting events, most of the time, your tickets get revoked. You're not allowed back in. He shouldn't be allowed back in.
And sadly, I think what it comes down to, as it always does with money, I know, and I'm sure it's similar there, in having my pit tickets. Half your cost is buying tickets. The other half are donations throughout the year to the athletic department. My seating assignment isn't based on what I'm willing to pay for the tickets. It's what I'm willing to donate through the year, and you get these priority points. And if this guy's sitting where he sits, he's contributing a lot of money to that athletic department, and I don't think they have the guts or the gumption to throw him out with when the money's rolling in, which is a whole other discussion with these schools.
Wouldn't it be nice if he did, though? I mean, if somebody actually took a stand to say, look, I get it, he contributes money, but this behavior can't be tolerated. And unfortunately, that's not something that's going to happen when money's involved, because cash is king, and the more cash that you're going to give to a program, the more highly regarded and defended you're going to be.
No question about it. It drives me nuts with college sports, and you talk about the NCAA in general, and it's a prevailing problem there.
Which makes me curious is if they actually can get the college athletes unionized, how would the union deal with this? How would a college athletes union deal with this if they can actually get the unionized players?
Yeah, and I think it would end differently, and it's yet another argument for the players being able to do this.
Exactly.
All right, I'll tell you what, we are slap out of time, unfortunately, but Pam, it was great talking with you, and I hope we can get you back on again. Why don't you take a couple of minutes and tell everybody where they can find you?
Oh, absolutely. It was my pleasure. Anytime, guys, just let me know, and we'll do this. You can find me every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Sports Infusion. I always tweet the links out, and you can follow me on Twitter, @SportyDiva. I also do have a website for my Sports Infusion show, which is www.sportsinfusion.net. I also do a show on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with Andrew Fishbane, Chad the Buffalo Cetera, Jeff Sneddon and Rob Steele for Armed Forces Radio, which I'm really, really excited about. Just because anytime I can, you know, do something that gives to the men and women overseas that serve our country. And so thanklessly, it's a pleasure for me.
Yes, indeed.
I don't think anyone can say thank you enough to them. And when we see these people, instead of saying, you know, you should go up to them and you should say thank you. Just thank you. Is there anything I can do for you? Because they, you know, they spend holidays away from their families. They really, really don't get thanked enough. And we have the luxuries we have every day because of these people. And, you know, I'm just honored to be part of that.
And no question about it, we've had the opportunity to do the same as well, and we certainly don't take it lightly. Well, Pamela, we thank you so much, and let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Have a nice night, guys.
You too. Thanks.
All right, Rick. Well, I think this first a great guest. I think this first bonus show, The Maiden Voyage, has been a success.
Yes, thanks to Pamela Michelle at Sporty Diva on Twitter for joining us. That's why it was a success, and we thank her once again. So I guess that about wraps up
that
bonus hour.
Yeah, no question about it. A great hour. Had a lot of fun doing it. So thank you again to Pamela. Thank you to that fellow you called with the recording studio. Tell Mom we will be there soon.
You betcha.
All right. We will be back. Check this out. You're already hearing this. So after this, the next time you hear us will be live Tuesday, 7 o'clock Eastern on The Blitz on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Check them out at the AFRN. Get a hold of Pamela. Get a hold of them on Twitter, at Sporty Dita, at the AFRN. Let them know you heard the show here. Let them know you liked it, and let's spread the word. So until Tuesday, Rick, I guess, because now it's Thursday, remember. Until Tuesday, we'll see you.
Take care.
That's a good song right there.
Horrifying.
You want me to sing it? This is a bonus hour. I can do whatever I want.
I just want to hear some quality.
Oh, this is quality, my friend.
Ray Vaughan.
Who?
Yeah.
And we begin to rock. Steady. Steady. You don't know who this is, do you, Rick?
Care less. I got my headphones on.
This is the Whispers. You know nothing about the Whispers.
Don't want to.
Why not? What's wrong with you? Free your mind and the rest will follow. In Vogue taught us that.
Who?
You don't know who In Vogue is either?
Yeah, but never
I hear you say the word Stevie Ray Vaughan 8 times a day. I need to find out who this cat is.
No, you don't.
What'd he sing? Would I know any of this stuff? Would I have heard anything he's done?
If you're part of the real world, yes.
The real world?
In your stupid existence, probably not.
Because I like the Whispers. My existence is not worthwhile?
No, it's not.
All right, Rick's packing up. I think he wants me to leave his house. So we're really out of here this time. After the hook. Hold on, we got to play the hook one more time.
They've already turned it off.
No, they haven't. This is the best part of the show.
All night long.